It's time for the Douglas Coleman Show. Mr. Smooth and Savvy is joined by guests from all walks of life, from the entertainment industry to authors to political and social commentators, the famous and not so famous, the controversial and the light and fluffy. We have it all. Now, here's Douglas Coleman.
Okay, please welcome to the Douglas Coleman Show, George Stevens, Jr. Hi, George, how are you?
Well, Douglas, nice to speak with you.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. It's a pleasure to have you here. I'm looking at your bio, and as we were talking about before we got on, there is so much information here. I don't think we'll be able to cover all of it, but let's at least cover the book and give people kind of an overview of what this book is about. Your book is called My Place in the Sun, which was a movie title, right? And your father produced the movie, was that correct?
Well, it's a variation on a movie title, yes. My father made a film called A Place in the Sun.
Oh, A Place.
And my book is called A Place in the Sun, starring Elizabeth Taylor, Montgomery Clift, and Shelley Winters, for which he won his first Oscar. And I call my book My Place in the Sun, Life in the Golden Age of Hollywood and Washington, because I've lived two lives combined. The first part of it in Hollywood, and then I had a big change of life when I was 29, when the great Edward R. Murrow, the famed broadcaster who had accepted an invitation from President Kennedy to become head of the United States Information Agency at the beginning of the new frontier. I accepted that and went back to run the motion picture division of USIA, which made documentary films telling America's story abroad. So my book encompasses the kind of extraordinary people I've worked with in both Hollywood and Washington.
So your dad was bringing you to the studios when you were a kid and sort of exposing you to what he did in his life?
Just a little bit when I was a kid. But when he came home from the war, he gave up his directing career for 3 years during World War II to head combat motion picture photography, starting with D-Day on through the liberation of Paris, the Battle of the Bulge, and the liberation of the concentration camp at Dachau. And when he came back from the war, actually my summer, I did not have a job. I just graduated from high school, and he said, "You can help me." So he gave me two tasks. One was to break down Theodore Dreiser's great novel, An American Tragedy, parts one and part two, into notebooks, because he was about to start the writing of the screenplay of A Place in the Sun, the movie that we just talked about that he won the Oscar for. And the other job was to read books and scripts that were sent over for Paramount for his consideration. And one afternoon I picked up a book and read it in the afternoon and went over to his bedroom that night, and he was in bed, and I said, "Dad, this is really a good story. I think you ought to read it." And he said, "Why don't you tell me the story?" So I was pacing around his bed trying to reconstruct what I'd read that afternoon from the small book called Shane by Jack Schaefer, which led to his next great movie called Shane, that starred Alan Ladd and Van Heflin, Gene Arthur and Jack Palance.
So he was doing the writing, the screenwriting, as well as directing those movies?
He worked on the screenplays with a writer or writers in every instance.
Okay, wow. He also directed Giant, which is certainly one of my favorite films. Were you in any way involved in that film, or did you get to watch the shooting?
I just graduated from college, and I was supposed to go in the Air Force as a ROTC officer, but the Korean War ended, and I again had nothing to do, and my father says, "You can help me." So I sat in for 8 months in the meetings with Dad and Ivan Moffat and Fred Gill, the screenwriters, as the screenplay for Giant was developed. And then I went into the Air Force for 2 years and came out and worked on the editing with him.
Wow. Did you meet James Dean?
I did. Rock Hudson, Elizabeth Taylor, and James Dean. And I got to know Jimmy quite well. Of course, he had a tragic ending just after he finished shooting Giant. But just 2 weeks before, I had been visiting the set and watching a scene being shot, and Jimmy walked in his tinted glasses and told me he bought a new Porsche Spyder. And then he said, "It's outside. Would you like to go for a ride?" And I went out, and there was this little gray Spyder sitting close to the ground with no top. And he and I got in it, and we drove around the Warner Brothers lot with these big, tall sound stages and this roaring race car. Wow. And made it safely back to the Giant soundstage. But just 2 weeks later, Jimmy decided he was going to ship the car up to Salinas for a race he was going to drive in. And at the last minute, he decided to drive it on the highway. And that was the morning that he was killed driving to Northern California.
Was he personality-wise as sort of sultry and serious as he played, or was he different off camera?
Well, there was a good deal of that, but he also had a light side and could be very funny and could be a good companion, and I found him to be that.
Well, at that time, you and him were about the same age, weren't you?
We were,
yeah.
Yes. You know, if you've seen Giant, It's Rock Hudson, Elizabeth Taylor are married, and James Dean works on the ranch. But at the beginning of the film, they're young newlyweds, Rock and Elizabeth. But at the end of the film, they're middle age with grandchildren. And Dad cast Elizabeth and Jimmy, who were both 23, and Rock, 28. Believing that you could believe a love story more of people falling in love with young actors rather than the other way where you have older actors and they try to play young. And Rock and Elizabeth and Jimmy did such extraordinary jobs. Both Rock and Jimmy were nominated for Oscars for their performances. So it was quite a feat. And it's a picture, a movie that really stands the test of time. It was about an independent woman, and which was not a popular theme then, but is so understood and popular today. And it was about the problems with the difficulties of the Hispanics living in Texas at that time. So Giant is a very contemporary movie today.
Yeah, it holds up well. I mean, I just watched it, a few months ago. And
really?
Yeah, it doesn't appear dated at all. It's very relevant.
Well, you know, just a year ago, Steven Spielberg's a good friend, and he called me and said we should do a restoration of Giant because the new technology, it can make it more look more like it did when it first came out. And we showed that restoration a year ago at the Turner Classic Festival in Hollywood, and Stephen and I introduced it. And to see that film in an IMAX theater with a large audience was so invigorating, and it played like a new film, and with these wonderful looking actors and great story. My father had the night he won the Oscar for A Place in the Sun, I was just 17. We were driving home, and the Oscar was on the seat in the car between us. And he looked over at me, and he said, "You know," he said, "we'll have a better idea what kind of a film this is in about 25 years. In those days, movies came and went.
Yeah.
There were no DVDs or Cinematheques. But so you a couple of months ago watched a 65-year-old film that really has stood the test of time. And you said it feels like a a film of today, which, you know, is really a theme of my father's work and my own work.
So are those Oscar statues, are they really gold, since you had one sitting right next to you?
You know, I don't know what they're made out of, honestly. They're not real gold, no, but the color is gold.
Are they heavy?
They're heavy, yeah. I mean, if it was gold, you know, you could take a nice trip to Europe if you went to the hawk shop.
Melted it down or something, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go back to Ed Murrow, because I don't think I've ever interviewed anybody who had known him, and it seems like you knew him quite well. Just tell me a little bit about him. Tell me the story and how you got involved working with him.
Well, Ed, for your audience, my first contact, if you will, with Ed was when I was a young fellow, 12 years old, and he was reporting from Europe during World War II. And he had this famous line, "This is London." And he'd be reporting from the rooftops while London was being bombed. And then he came back and had a wonderful career at CBS on television as a newsman and maker of documentaries. And he exposed Senator Joseph McCarthy, who was quite a villain of the 1950s. And then Kennedy asked him to go to Washington. And so I had the honor of working and reporting directly to Ed Murrow. And he was just a man of such integrity and wisdom and humor. And he was a great public servant. He made the United States Information Agency, which no longer exists, into a wonderful voice for American ideas around the world.
Did that sort of become, and now the name escapes me, but the radio, Radio America, or?
No, Voice of America.
Voice of America.
That was part of USIA, and I ran the film division, which was the counterpart for film and television to the radio of Voice of America.
Okay. All right. We're kind of running down on time, but I did want to get to AFI. And there was, it says here that you rescued 10,000, over 10,000 endangered motion pictures and increased the collection to 40,000 films. So these were films that were sitting in a vault just sort of disintegrating or something?
It was in Washington when the National Endowment for the Arts was started. And they knew what to do about ballet and symphony orchestras, but they didn't know what to do about film. And I suggested an American Film Institute, and it was created under Lyndon Johnson. And I was asked to run it. And at the time, half of the movies that had been made since the beginning of the 20th century up until the 1960s were lost or missing, because film was made on nitrate stock, which could simply decompose in a film can or catch fire. So we started a program to find these films, because the producers didn't understand that there would be value later on. So they ended up kind of in libraries and archives and vaults with no organization. And actually it's 40,000 films that we rescued in collaboration with the Museum of Modern Art that are now in the AFI collection at the Library of Congress in Washington. And those are a lot of the films that you see on Turner Classic Movies that, were it not for AFI, would have been lost forever.
So these were Hollywood feature films?
Yes.
Not documentary type stuff?
Famous ones, yes.
Wow, okay. Let's see. We got time for one more. Let's talk about the Kennedy Center. What was your involvement with that? You kind of looks like you created it.
The Kennedy Center Honors was a project that I started and conceived. And in 1978 was the first year of the Kennedy Center Honors, which was broadcast on CBS, where we honored the great performing artists of our time. President Kennedy had said, and I'd written down the quote, "I look forward to an America that will not be afraid of grace and beauty, that will honor achievement in the arts the way we honor achievement in business and statecraft. And this became the idea for the event where we honored these artists and presented them on television. And I produced it for 37 years.
Wow.
And that's part of what is so interesting about this book, is that I worked with 190 of the greatest creative people in America, and combined that with the American Film Institute and my life working with, I guess it was 7 presidents while in Washington. You know, I just have so many great stories about fascinating people, ranging from one we mentioned earlier to Sidney Poitier and Barack Obama and Robert Kennedy. And and Ed Murrow. I'm just so happy to be able to tell these stories, and readers seem to enjoy it. And also people who now can listen to My Place in the Sun on Audible or get it on Amazon, because I recorded the audio book.
Oh, okay. Now the audio book is out, because this book in print form came out when, last year?
Yeah, it's the same book, but I just recently finished doing the audio version.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right, great. Well, George, we could have gone on probably for hours, and I would love to have you back if you'd be interested in coming back sometime. We could just talk a little bit more and do a part two, but we're going to have to wind this one up. Thank you so much for coming on. My guest is George Stevens, Jr. The book is called My Place in the Sun, and the audiobook is now out and available. Do you have a personal website or one that you want to give out?
Yes, it's George Stevens, Jr., all run together, GeorgeStevensJr.com. And it's a website, and it's got some little pieces of film and of all these people, Jacqueline Kennedy and others that we've talked about. And we welcome people to that.
Okay, great. Well, again, thanks so much for coming on the show. It was a pleasure talking to you. Best of luck with the book. Hope it does very well.
Great, Douglas. I've really enjoyed talking with you, and happy to come back sometime.